Lake Effect continues now on 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. I'm Bonnie North. Although Mandy Patinkin may be best known for his role as Inigo Montoya in The Princess Bride, the performer's life has been characterized less by vengeance and more by his humanitarianism. He's dedicated time to working with refugees and underprivileged Americans, including kids in his hometown, Chicago. Patinkin grew up in the South Shore neighborhood of Chicago, where he first started performing and which he credits in part for his love of music. Patinkin will be in Milwaukee to perform songs from his album Diary tomorrow evening at the Riverside Theater. But first, he joins Lake Effect's Joy Powers by phone from New York to talk about the album, his work as an activist, and his love of the Midwest.
I feel the Midwest has humility. I feel the Midwest is not arrogant, and it has a humility that I admire.
Yeah, I think this might not be the most, you know, humility kind of comment, but I think we think that of ourselves as well.
That's good. It's okay. It's okay to say that.
So, you know, the South Side of Chicago has specifically become kind of code for gun violence, for social ills.
Yeah.
And we hear politicians, not just in the U.S., but there was recently a U.K. politician who brought up, you know, the South Side of Chicago not wanting his neighborhood to become the South Side of Chicago.
I refer to the South Side sometimes to people. I said, you know, the South Side, which are now the killing field. And that was my neighborhood. A few years ago, I took my friend for his 60th birthday. He wanted to take his friends to their hometown so that we could all show him where we grew up. So I brought him to the South Side, and I gave him the tour. And I remember toward the end of it, it was getting darker and darker for us, just in terms of the depressing nature of everywhere we looked. And I said, well, before we leave, I have to show you the Young Men's Jewish Council Youth Center where I did the plays, because I didn't like school and my mother told me to go there. And that's where I did these plays after school and where I found my life in the theater. And I just need to show it to you. It's also where I went to nursery school. It was a little two-story building on Phillips. So we came around the corner and there was the building. And there were rolls of barbed wire all on the top of the roof of the first story and on all on the second story and around the building. And I lost my composure for a minute and I lost my breath and I just couldn't believe what had happened to this place. And my friend is one of the most liberal people I've ever known in my life, and progressive people and caring people about everyone. And he said, I don't feel safe here, and I think we should go and not get out of the car, and we should go. And we did go. The next day, we were driven by a car service to the airport from our hotel, and he overheard us talking about things we had done while we'd been in Chicago. And he said, where were you? Excuse me, I don't mean to interrupt. He said, but where did you guys go? I said, the South Side, South Shore, where I grew up. He said, you went there by yourselves? I said, yes. He said, you're lucky to be alive in this car right now. I said, why? He said, I'm a cop. Cops won't go there. And he said, you're really lucky to be alive. Now, I didn't feel that kind of threat when I was there, but my friend felt some danger that I was living off of my youth, my childhood, and only seeing more of what I remembered, not what I was in the moment of seeing. So the question isn't what was when I was little or what is now. I think the real question is, how do we change it? And how do we create opportunity for these young people, like I had at the Young Men's Jewish Council Youth Center? There's an organization I support that does after-school programs in the heart of this area to give kids after-school opportunities, just like I had. I want people who are in underprivileged areas and who therefore think it's attractive to be a part of a gang because of lack of other opportunity to have so much opportunity, maybe more opportunity than anywhere else in the world, that they're just overflowing with possibility. So that's how I think it will change. And I don't think it's about more police protection, and I don't think it's about politicians running on how they're going to stop the violence. I think you need to just give the children and the families great opportunity.
Yeah, you know, we're talking about Chicago right now, but the kind of deterioration that you're talking about in the neighborhood that you grew up in is also something that we've seen here in Milwaukee, something that we've seen in a lot of U.S. cities. As somebody who grew up there, you know, 1950s, 1960s, did you see the changes happening? What's happened in that area since you were a kid?
Well, when I was a kid, it was a Jewish-Polish neighborhood. Jews and Catholics and Poles, and we were Polish too, even though we were Jewish, we were Polish, but there was a group of Catholic kids that I think were also Polish. You know, they didn't think of the Jews as Poles. And then I remember the Jews all started to leave because African Americans moved into the neighborhood. And there were people knocking on doors, you know, looking for possible homes to buy. My father did not leave. My father stayed on the South Side. His business was there, his synagogue was in Hyde Park, and his friends and life were there. So we stayed. I was in the first graduating class of Kenwood High School. There were, I think, 3,000 kids in our graduating class, and I think there were 100 and some Caucasian kids, and everyone else was African American. And I was one of the Caucasian kids. I loved that high school. That high school changed my life. I didn't like school. You know, the classes in school, I mean. But so the only class I did okay in was chorus. And at Kenwood High School, chorus was taught by a woman named Lena McClin. She was this great lady, and it was an all-black chorus, except for me and one other person, I think, that were not black. And it was gospel music, which is probably the best music on the planet. And Lena McClin said to me, this African-American gifted human being, one day when she asked me to sing something, and I used my voice, and then I thought, oh, she wanted me to sing like an opera singer, big and loud, like somebody else just sang. And I immediately started to apologize when I finished. I said, oh, I'm sorry, Miss McClin. I know you want to. She said, no, child. She said, Liz, you listen to Lena. Anybody tells you not to use that voice, that quiet, high voice of yours, you tell them, come talk to Lena. You use that voice wherever you go and wherever you want. And that woman at that moment gave me the confidence to literally use my voice in any way that my voice came out of me. And not, she changed a lot of people's lives.
You know, you really have used your voice in so many different ways. And in a moment, we'll talk about, you know, your musical work, of course. But, you know, something that you're involved in that people may not know, you're involved in a lot of humanitarian work, and you've specifically worked with refugees. You know, how do you view the refugee crisis that the world is currently experiencing?
The refugee crisis, along with the climate crisis, are the crises of our time. There are 70.8 million refugees, people fleeing for their lives. No matter where you go. Refugees are fleeing from persecution, they are fleeing from conflict, and they are fleeing because of climate change. This current administration has chosen to essentially shut the door on refugees and brought the quota down from the standard from all past generations in America, and I'm talking about Republican and Democratic administrations over the decades. The average number that America always took were 95,000 people were welcomed to our country, including, I dare say, your ancestors and mine, and probably everyone reading or listening to these words. And this current administration just brought that number down to 18,000, the lowest number in the history of this moment. So what do we do about it? Well, I ask that everyone approach their representatives and call your local representative. Ask them to co-sponsor what is called the GRACE Act, which allows 95,000 refugees to come to the United States per year. That is the historic and bipartisan average, no matter what. And then what's the other big thing you can do? You don't need to be a celebrity or a journalist or a politician or a wealthy person or a person of privilege. You need to be a human being to help refugees. You need to exercise your humanitarian nature. You need to welcome people. You need to be kind. A little refugee boy from Afghanistan named Farad Nouri said to me when I asked him, what do you want people to know about your situation? He said, I want them to be kind to refugees, not just to me, he said, but to refugees everywhere. They need kindness. They need to be invited into your community, into your home, into your schools, into your living rooms, to your church, your mosque, your synagogue, your temples, your country. They need to not be feared, just like our ancestors needed not to be feared. And these are false fears that are spread for political purposes for people to get elected. There is no need to be afraid of refugees. They are vetted more than almost any other citizen in the world to this country. They are the safest citizens probably that exist in this country. I've learned that through my relationships with people from the intelligence community over my 8-year journey with Homeland and extraordinary relationships that I forged with highly educated people about intelligence, like the top people in the world. And they told me that we are the gold standard in terms of vetting foreigners who come into this country.
You're someone who has been very careful about how you use your voice and very purposeful in the way that you advocate for things. And one of the things, I actually watched an interview with you and Stephen Colbert, and you talked about, you know, just how much you learned from portraying Saul and how much you learned from listening to people. What did that experience teach you?
It taught me many things. The character alone had a nature that I saw in what the writers had given me, that he was quieter than I was, and that he was a listener, and that he had profound empathy. I, too, have empathy, and always have, but I never listened the way Saul Berenson listened. And he taught me to even be kinder than however kind I thought I'd been in the past. And also, the relationship I had to the show gave me a platform globally that I never imagined having, and it happened at the same time that 125,000 refugees were fleeing Syria, going across the Balkan route, trying to have a new beginning in Germany. And the irony of just going to Germany for a new beginning is the polar opposite of what my parents' generation were dealing with, my grandparents and parents' generation. And that relationship to the refugee community globally has been one of the most profound gifts of my life. To have that kind of perspective and be inspired to not waste a moment of my life because of witnessing how these people have been knocked down and get up and live again. I think the most important thing we need to learn as a human race is to learn to become more comfortable with being uncomfortable and learn to sit with our discomfort and not to fix everything every second. It's okay if things aren't just the way we need them to be. There are people who make do and make wonderful lives out of a lot of things being broken. They make art out of a broken life. And I think we need to be inspired by them, and we need to learn to be more comfortable with our discomfort.
You know, much as your activism has evolved over time, so has your work. You're about to be in Milwaukee for your Diaries tour. How has your work with refugees, how has your work in your community impacted your art?
It's made me not be afraid to sing songs that tell truth and not be afraid to reach for song and words and moments and music that celebrate life more than I've ever allowed myself to celebrate it before, and to be silly, to have fun, but to also be pointed in highlighting truths. I'm a mailman. I'm not the genius who writes these songs. I'm not the gifted person who creates these songs, the words and the music. I'm just the mailman, but I deliver the mail. And what I'm lucky to be able to deliver is the collective body that write these, what I've often referred to as wishes. They've often written these things, these lyrics, these words, this music. They've written what they wished for themselves and for the world at large. And in many cases, these writers wrote what they couldn't attain themselves, but they wished it for themselves and the world. And in many cases, they left it behind for it to be celebrated by the world. And so to be able to learn these wishes, memorize them, musicalize them, sing them, and share them with a community in every theater and concert hall I go to is like being in a refugee camp, hearing the women play the drums and watching them sing and dance and cry all in the same moment. It just is filled with the experience of living and being. And this life is so precious that to waste it and be sarcastic about it and not recognize all the blessings that we've been given is a crime against the humanity within ourselves.
You know, my father used to say that each of us is a rock that sends ripples through generations. And it feels like you are really living in that thought, in those ripples.
Joy, I try. You know, Stephen Sondheim and James Lapine wrote a show that I got to be in called Sunday in the Park with George. And in it, James Lapine wrote the words that I got to repeat every night, often, many times during the course of the play, the musical. And the words were, connect, George, connect. And that single word, connect, is the word of my life. It is the word that I live, to be, to understand, to embody, to not waste or squander, and to reach for, and to risk for. A friend of mine said, if you wake up and you don't take a risk today, don't wake up.
Wise words. Mandy Patinkin, I'd like to thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me and for joining us here in Milwaukee.
Thank you. Have a wonderful everything.
Mandy Patinkin is an actor and singer who is perhaps best known for his role as Inigo Montoya in The Princess Bride. Patinkin will be in Milwaukee tomorrow evening for a performance at the Riverside Theater. There's more information at WUWM.com.